Hey guys, welcome back to the Spates What a Lad Dance in France preview show. And what a week of Rugby World Cup action we had. Aussies are gone. Match of the round lived up to its billing and so much to talk about. Lucky enough to be joined again by Surly from Surly Talk Sport, who is coming up to us live from France. Mate, how is the country after the big scare of the main man, DuPont?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a roller coaster for the locals, eh? And geez, they're a passionate bunch, so they certainly let you know about it. But at first it was panic, a bit of frustration as well, I think, at the fact that he was still on the paddock at that stage of the game. I think a lot of people thought that he would have been off enjoying a few beverages a bit earlier than that. And there was a genuine thought as well that if he's gone, then they probably don't win that quarter final. But now, bit of optimism, this mask, we could see Mask DuPont, and now they think they're right back in with a sniff. So yeah, I think the next couple of days is going to be even more news coming out about it. Apparently World Rugby have to approve the mask, and they're not happy with the first one that the French have proposed or something like that. So it's going to be typical drama. But yeah, I think they think they're back in with a chance. They do back their depth, but without DuPont, I think we all knew that it might well have been just the quarterfinal as far as they're going. It sounds promising now.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, isn't it, watching that unfold over the next few weeks. The drama of it, massive, obviously. How good is he, man? In that game, he was unbelievable. He's one of probably the best player I've ever seen, I reckon. He is just that good. I was just so blown away by him, but like you say, they kept him on. It was still only like 45 minutes to 50 minutes, wasn't it? I'm pretty sure the French coach probably had him as triple captain as well, because he was on absolute fire. He was on 105 points after about 40 minutes. Absolutely killing it. But yeah, looking forward to watching that unfold over the next few weeks. But of course, we're also joined by our Northern Hemisphere guru, Jake the Snake, after successfully tipping Wales by 40. Jacob, well done, mate, last week.
Hey, what a week, boys. It's coming home. It's coming home. England are going to win the World Cup 20 years on from the Johnny Wilkinson drop goal. We play heads-up rugby now. We play the space. We pump the minnows. It's Owen Farrell redemption arc. He's going to lift the World Cup, player of the tournament. What a week.
How genuine's all that?
not very genuine, but I was happy. Now, good week, like you said, boys. Good one for me with the Wales prediction. The boys came up big, or did Australia come up small? You decide. And then the England performance I was happy with for the first time on the podcast. So very, very happy week for me, boys.
Yeah, well, looking forward to getting through all of these reviews with a little bit more detail. And we'll start with the France clinic, 96-0 over Namibia. Obviously, the big talking points are around Pinot, DuPont, Ramos. All those three were absolutely incredible. And you've already mentioned the masked return of DuPont. But what did you make of that game, Snake?
Geez, France back to their absolute best. Like we said on the podcast last week, we were expecting a reaction after a disappointing game last week, and they absolutely brought it, didn't they, boys? Even at the end of the game when the clock was in the red, they were trying to go 90 metres just to get one more score for that French crown. Real showman stuff. Some genuine chat in Europe that Macron and France might invade Namibia after the high shot on DuPont, so some sort of tense international relations going in as well. But absolute clinic from France. I loved watching this game. Like, obviously very one-sided, but sometimes it's just great to watch a textbook schooling, isn't it?
Yeah, man, they've got some players. Those three that I mentioned were absolutely incredible out there. What stood out for you, Surly?
I felt sorry for Namibia on the other side of things, I think. The coach even mentioned that perhaps they rested a couple people targeting this Uruguay game. So it was their B team going up against the Rolls-Royce French side. I think what they lost tonight, that's 26 in a row now, so it's tough times for them. I think they've scored 11 points prior to this game against Uruguay and conceded 219. So it's not easy being a Namibian rugby player at the moment, and they felt the full wrath of the French. So you got to feel sorry for them. But yeah, this was France just flexing their muscle. We thought that that was their intent going into it once we saw the team named. And yeah, I think to keep it under 100 was probably a win.
Yeah. And the next game was Argentina versus Samoa, 19-10. A bit more of a duller watch. What did you make of this one, Surly?
Yeah, it was a tough watch. I was actually really excited for this game, but towards halftime, I almost turned it off, to be fair. It was pretty disappointing. I think Samoa probably left their run a little too late, but we're never really going to catch the Argentinians, who were better, but still not quite at that level that they were playing at a couple years ago, in my opinion. So, yeah, both sides didn't really impress me, but yeah, it wasn't the exciting, physical, expensive watch that I was hoping for.
Yeah, do you see anything change in that, Paul? Where do you see Samoa and Argentina?
I think Argentina are going to get through, unfortunately, but I would still love to see Samoa get through, but I'm just not sure they're capable at the moment. I see no Sapawanga this week again. I think every game now becomes a must win, and unfortunately they're losing a couple key troops at important times, so I just don't think they're going to have enough.
Interesting. And the next game is Georgia versus Portugal. 19-all. Absolute classic game between these two. Snakey, you've been talking up Georgia from round one. Disappointing draw for them against Portugal, but they had their opportunities.
Yeah, man, really been disappointed with Georgia at this World Cup. There's been a lot of chat in Europe over the last couple of years about, is it time to introduce Georgia to the Six Nations? They obviously turned over Wales in Cardiff a year ago, maybe 18 months ago, and they've always, you know, whenever they've played England or Ireland or Wales, they've always been a niggly team to get a result against. They're so good at set piece time. They're really, really physical. And when teams play like that between World Cups, you just want them to turn up to a World Cup and show their best hand. And, you know, it's good for the game, I think, in Europe, especially if we can get more of these teams closer to the Six Nations guys. So it's just been a really big disappointment for me how they haven't really turned up at all at this World Cup. I was really hoping that they would come in and ruffle some feathers and get people talking about whether the Six Nations should be looked at and restructured. But it just hasn't been the case, and I think it probably will set them back a little bit for the next couple of years as a result.
In a couple of clutch moments, or not clutch moments for the kickers, you've been there before, but you've always nailed them. How do you think those kickers will be feeling?
Pretty rough. I think that the last one, if you hit a kick and you strike it pure and it just fades on you, I think you can sleep happy at night knowing that you gave it your best shot. And Georgia's one from the touchline with 2 minutes to go was that. He absolutely nailed it and it just drew off to the left-hand side. And you kind of think like, I did my job, I hit the ball clean, and sometimes it just doesn't hold for you. The Portugal one at the end, the penalty, he pulled out of the kick a little bit early. Maybe a head came up looking where it was gone. Maybe the moment a little bit too big. So a bit tougher to take. But boys, like, I've really enjoyed watching some of these minnow teams play, especially against each other. I think the sort of lack of defensive organisation and set piece focus from the teams, combined with the fact that they both do want to play, they're actually really, really enjoyable watches. And I've enjoyed watching them a lot more than some of the tier one sort of like scrum fests at times.
Yeah, I agree. I felt like that game was really entertaining, though.
It was awesome, yeah.
To have a go. It wasn't Georgia, the Georgian style that I was sort of expecting. They were willing to fling it out to the backs and throw some razzly offloads, and that was a very, very good game. Okay, the next game is England versus Chile. 5 tries for Aaron Dow, your mate, Snake. What did you make of them?
Mate, awesome. Like, look, full disclaimer, like, obviously, I'm aware this is England playing against Chile, right? Like a team that they should put to the sword. I'm not kidding myself in thinking that England have suddenly made this progress because we've scored 11 tries against the Chilean team, right? Let's just get that out of the way. But for me, the real big positive with England was like the attack progress that they made, not in terms of like what happened and what they did against the opposition, but in terms of how they organized themselves. Like, they just, for the first time in such a long time, I saw them building attack with like layers, players extracting and working off the ball, trying to get up and get to space. And then the big difference with this game to what I saw maybe against Japan was like the mindset of that England team to like look up, see space, and then go to it straight away, not waiting for the next phase. Oh, we'll go in a second. We'll go after this next forwards carry. Like, just going straight away. We saw them score off a quick tap penalty. We saw them score in some transition moments where they just shift two pass straight away to the space and execute. And like, that doesn't really matter who you're playing against. That's stuff of your own team working off the ball and working within their shape that really excited me. I think the only question is, like, does this stop now? Like, do England draw a line now and go, oh, that was fun, and now we go back to what we did before? Or going into a week off now, do we start to continue to develop it? And I think the big thing, Jim, is like the selection thing with England now. How do they select? Because you look at guys like Henry Arundel, who scored 5 tries at the weekend, and like, is he the complete player? Absolutely not. The kid's 20 years old. Of course, there's parts of his game that he still needs to develop across different areas of his game, obviously. The thing that I have with England and English rugby in general is that we always look at reasons why we can't pick someone. We never accept reasons to pick someone and identify those as a priority. And I feel like that's often the difference between, say, like your New Zealands and Irelands and England, is like we're constantly looking at what he can't do, as opposed to like this kid has genuine game-breaking, game-changing ability. Surely we have to get him in the team and then find solutions for the areas of the game he needs to work on around that. Do you know what I mean, Jim?
100%, mate. Look at the passion you've got for this England jersey. Look at you go, mate.
Oh, it does get me upset sometimes, lads, because like we have the players to go toe to toe with like you boys, with Ireland, with South Africa. Like we have the players. We just often hold ourselves back because of this like attitude that you can't pick players if they have any kind of chink in their armor, even though they may have this like incredible upside.
Yeah. Now, that's interesting. What did you make of it, Surly? I'm keen to get your thoughts on obviously Marcus Smith at fullback and Farrell at 10.
Yeah, I think Snakey mentioned it there. They were attacking space, and that as a result to me was having those two in the side. I love watching Marcus Smith. He's one of those guys. He reminds me of like a Damian McKenzie, but almost like respectfully a bit better. He's so skillful, and he just throws caution to the wind. What he sees, he plays. And I think England can really benefit from that. So I enjoyed it. I was keen to know from Snakey, first 20 minutes, mate, how nervous were you? Because she was nil all, and I was starting to think, boy, the minutes are ticking by and everyone's expecting a cricket score here.
Yeah, I was pretty nervous, but then I thought, geez, I'm going to be able to have some juicy conversations on the podcast. So that got me through. I was writing in my notes on my phone, like ready to get stuck into them again.
So what do you think? Do you think they go back to George Ford for the big games? Do you think Marcus Smith has a chance to play fullback going forward?
Realistically, I don't think they'll pick Marcus because they're going to squeeze Owen Farrell into the midfield. And I totally understand the reasons why. I think Owen Farrell gets a understandably hard rep at sometimes from the media and fans, but they're going to squeeze Farrell into 12. I think the first two games of the tournament, Ford's kind of made himself undroppable in the way that Borthwick's trying to play. So the only question then is, do they go 3-10s and play Smith at fullback? And I just don't see the England coaching staff being that outgoing and creative. Yeah, I think potentially Arundel with 5 tries is enough to get himself on the wing, and I certainly think that back three is something they need to address. Like the back three that they played in the first two rounds of the comp, like what other tier one back line do those three guys, Daly, May and Freddie Stewart, what other back line do they get into in tier one countries? So I think there is room to change there. I think Smith's just unlucky with how the tournament started,
yeah,
with Ford obviously doing what he did against Argentina. And I think they'll go Ford and Farrell, and then they'll play it safe in the rest of the back line.
Fair enough. Well, they're in the right pool to still be experimenting anyway. So it looks like they're through to the quarters. And, definitely on the easier side of the draw. But the next game, South Africa v Ireland. Now, we pumped this one up to be the game of the tournament so far, and geez, going by the intensity in this game, it definitely lived up to it because, man, there was some serious contacts in this game. What did you make of it, Surly?
Yeah, I love this game. This was by far the game of the tournament so far, and we hyped it up to be that. I think it was better than that New Zealand-French game, definitely. I really enjoyed this watch. Like you mentioned, the intensity, the physicality, and what was impressive for me was just the accuracy of the collisions as well. Like, no cards. How refreshing was that to see? Like, guys with great tackle technique, still flying in, putting in big shots, but just nailing each other. Like, that's what Test match rugby at a Rugby World Cup is all about. And it was great to see Bundy Aki as well. Like, he's a footballer that I think in the past year has come on leaps and bounds. When you think of the Irish side from last year, he was scrapping to get into the bench in some of these big games, but now he's established himself as one of the best informed midfielders in the world at the moment, and he's dominating opposition backlines. He's a pleasure to watch. So those were the kind of main takeaways from me. And then we mentioned goal kicking last week. We thought it would come down to that, and unfortunately it did. So the whole time I was watching it, I was just thinking, geez, the ball's in Andre Pollard's court here to come back and potentially be a World Cup hero. They'll make a Netflix doco about him if he comes back. They beat Ireland and he kicks all the goals. I can see it already. So, yeah, the stage is set for him. But 16 wins on the trot for Ireland now, and it's just impressive. Like we've said a couple times, they come in as the number one ranked side. They somehow find themselves being underdogs for these games, and they just rise to the occasion every time.
Oh, do they what? And I thought they were outstanding in that game. They had their own issues as well, especially at line-out time, set piece. I was wondering how they were going to be able to get through this game and win it with the way their line-out was going. They blew a lot of opportunities early, but like I think you called it last week, Snake, South Africa not having a goal kicker did end up costing them, and man, did it what?
Yeah, massively, man. Like, I feel for the boys now. You can see it's become a thing in their head. And once it becomes a thing in your head, like within a tournament timescale, it's very difficult to fix. It's not like they're in a league campaign where he can take a week off, go back, work with his coach, sort of reassess and work with his psychologist and mentally come back from it fresh. Like, he's in a World Cup, the games come thick and fast, and I don't think there's going to be time for him to correct it. And you can just see so clearly that it's a thing in his head. Like, if you compare the way he's striking the ball to, like, say, Ramos, like when Ramos approaches the ball, man, it's so relaxed. It's so like confident, arrogant, smooth, and he just looks loose. And both the South African kickers, Faf and Lebok, like you just see both of them. It looks rushed. It looks twitchy. And then they snap at the ball and they keep pulling it short, like short left, which normally means that you've like snapped it and sort of tried to get rushed through the kick too early. And that often happens when you're a little bit nervous and you're not necessarily sure if it's going to go over when you line it up.
Mate, I know that feeling. That's exactly how I used to go. But
sorry, Jim, just on this one before we move on, man. I think that, fuck, this was an awesome game. I was really disappointed with South Africa's attack, though. I felt like the back line just let the game go by. I think for the majority of the game, like, the backs kind of just sat really, really deep behind the forwards and kind of just said, like, right, you lads go do your own thing, win us some momentum, and then we'll play. And because Ireland matched them up front physically, that never really happened. And then when the backs did have to take the ball on, they kind of just ended up going point, like my old head coach Les Kiss used to call it point to point, where you just go like ruck to the next ruck to the next ruck. You get to the touchline, then you come back to the next ruck. And you don't actually like ask the defense any questions. You don't challenge their folds at all. You don't change direction of your play. And it becomes really easy for Ireland to defend when they know they just have to meet people at the game line and front up. I think the last 10 minutes when South Africa had to go and chase the game was the only time like Lebok got connected out the back of that first pod, pulled the ball out, turned the corner, and he put Schneiman through a huge hole. Yeah. And that was the only time Ireland's defense looked fragile through the whole game. And I think I understand playing to your strengths, but like sometimes this obsession that South Africa have with physicality can really hold them back, because like they have the best back three in the world, in my opinion. And those guys didn't see the ball for 20, 30 minutes at a time sometimes. Yeah. If they sort that out, they can win this whole tournament massively, because the backs just did absolutely fuck all in this game.
Yeah, mate, I 100% agree with you, because I look at someone like Colby, who's one of the most dangerous players in the game. He's had such a quiet Rugby World Cup so far. Like you say, his ball touch count is so small. He's just not able to have the effect on a game that he probably deserves. And if they start getting that right, start getting Willemse and Colby into the game a little bit more, because those guys are so hard to tackle one-on-one. So it's only going to be good for the game.
Man, for sure.
One more thing on that game is the referees. Like, all these games are going to come down to small margins, and I'm sick of it already that the referee's the first man to be blamed. I thought Ben O'Keefe did a fantastic job. He's obviously been on the podcast before. I know how hard it is in these situations to get every decision right. He made a few decisions which probably could have gone either way, which is always going to be the case in the game. I'm sick of people screenshotting images, putting it up on social media and saying, why is this not a penalty, etc., or why is this a forward pass? Screenshots do not work in the game of rugby. So I think there's something going forward. Like, there is definitely going to be games which are going to be decided within 3 points, going to come down to a referee decision in hindsight. So we just have to let that go. And there's more opportunities than one moment to win a game. And I think I was listening to South Africa and Russi speak after the game. I thought he was awesome, saying he thought the game was controlled really well. Stuff like that's going to help referees in this tournament and going forward, let their fans just realise that there's so many more moments in a game to win it. It's not just going to come down to these one moments. But I thought I needed to get that off my chest, because I do love the referees. Okay, next game, Scotland v Tonga. 47-17. Snake, you really wanted to talk about this one. Go for it.
Yeah, man, like, geez, Scotland are so good in transition, aren't they, boys? Like, any kind of, like, turnover or if you kick to them loosely at all, like, they're so good in that broken field play. And I just, watching this game, like, I got really frustrated. Geez, I'm frustrated on this pod, aren't I, boys? I got really frustrated with, like, Tonga's inaccuracy and the fact that they just didn't respect possession of the ball at all. Like, obviously, offloading and keeping ball alive is a huge part of their, not just the mindset they play the game with, but, like, their culture as guys as well. Like, I totally understand that. But, like, you can't make a line break or a positive offload every single play. And I just felt like at times, especially in the first 20 minutes, and maybe it's nerves or whatever, I totally understand why, but, like, just trying to force offloads into holes that don't exist and then giving Scotland easy turnover ball where guys like Finn Russell just look like the best players in the world. And if you look at the Tongan guys who get it right, like Piatau, he doesn't offload every single play. He doesn't try and force offloads when they're not on. His decision-making around the offload is world-class. If he uses, like, footwork, fend, he gets the big forearm out and creates space, then he's always looking for the support. He's always getting those ridiculous offloads out. But when he doesn't, he just takes his medicine, ducks his head and finds the ground. And, like, I've said it three times on this pod in previous weeks, like, this Tongan team is absolutely stacked with individual players. They are such a good team. But they just basically pissed away possession so much to Scotland and let them, you know, do what they do best.
And I love how Gregor Townsend's come out and said that everyone's written them off, but he's still fairly confident that they can go through to the quarterfinals. They have to beat Ireland in that last round, which is going to be a hell of a game, but definitely not out of the picture. Where do you see that one, Surly?
Yeah, well, Scotland are going to be right up for it. And I think we've mentioned a couple of times, it's just so unfortunate that they didn't make it into Pool C or Pool D, because they're 100% worthy of a quarterfinal side. They're one of the top six sides in the world at the moment. So quarters would have been a minimum for them if they were in any other pool. So it's really unfortunate. They've had some good tussles with Ireland and they're certainly capable on their day. I just don't know if they have enough to go with them for the full 80 minutes, especially with the confidence that Ireland are playing with at the moment. But if you can catch them sleeping and if it's Finn Russell's day, then anything could happen. I love watching them play. I'd love to see them pull it off. But I just wonder if Ireland at the moment, red hot, definitely the best side in the world currently, might be a bridge too far. That is going to be a heck of a game too, though. And I feel like everyone just straight away jumping to All Blacks Ireland. I think there could still be another twist potentially, and maybe it's at the hands of Scotland.
Ooh, here we go. Heard it here first from Surly. He always predicts these sort of things. Absolute wizard. Okay, last game, Wales versus Australia. Wowee, what an absolute demolition job this one was. 40 points to 6. Aussie just did not fire a shot. Snakey, you called it. You predicted it. You said if Skelton was out, they'd win by about 3, but it was 37 more.
Yeah, well, look, boys, I made my prediction and I wasn't super confident, but I could not have predicted that Australia were going to defend this badly. Jesus Christ. They got opened up twice first phase by Wales, and we were sat here last week after watching Wales play against Portugal and we were like, geez, can these boys offer anything from structured attack? And then they've diced Australia open from 5-man lineouts. It's yeah, really, really shocking day at the office for Australia, wasn't it, lads? I appreciate they're a young side and I appreciate they're in a strange place at the moment, if that's a kind way to put it. But ultimately, it's a World Cup. You can't be talking about youth and preparing for the future at a World Cup. And they got absolutely dished up, conceded 40 points to a team that, what did they put on Portugal last week? 30?
They won by 20 against Portugal last week, yeah.
There you go. So
it sets up an interesting matchup this week. Portugal, obviously, going in as favourites. So what do you make of it, Surly? Obviously, you're a big Eddie Jones fan. What did you make of him and his press conference? Obviously, you weren't there to bag him, but...
Yeah, I was pretty gutted that the Waddleland pass still hasn't arrived, because that was the opportune time. I tell you, if Eddie's ever going to swing, I reckon it was after that game. But yeah, much like Snakey, I was just watching this game wondering, were Wales amazing? Were Aussie just really shit? And I think perhaps it was more leaning towards the second one, but now everyone's big on Wales, so it's crazy what an 80-minute performance can make. I thought Gareth Enscombe was great. When Dan Biggar went down early, I was a bit worried for them, and I thought this could really level things out, but Enscombe, he's got a great boot, both off the tee, he's got the drop kick, and then he's a great game driver as well, so he's had a horrible run with injuries. It was really cool to see him out there shining, getting his confidence up, and he's going to be crucial for them kind of moving forward if Biggar's going to miss the rest of the tournament or a couple games, whatever it may be. But yeah, it's crazy for Aussie now. I see they're already talking about getting rid of Eddie. The old Zoom interviews popped up now. Apparently he's been yarning to clubs in Japan pre-tournament. You don't know how much of this is true, because once the media get a whiff of something, they can run a mile. But yeah, Aussie rugby going forward, I don't know, man. Like, if I was them, I'd be looking at like a Stephen Larkham, someone like that, someone who can win the locker room and has coaching experience, because I think winning the locker room first point is where you start, and then you build from there. They're hosting the next World Cup in 2027, and if they don't make it out of their pool play, that's one of the great failures. So now this next cycle for them is so important, and I think it starts with just getting some respect and credibility back.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, you look back at that Dave Rennie sacking, and man, just shake your head. Like, speak like of good coaches, if you could choose, like, who is the perfect person to take over, I'd almost get Dave Rennie, but he's obviously been there, been sacked. I thought he was doing a good job. He was building his squad nicely for a Rugby World Cup, and who knows how they would have gone if he stayed there. But, yeah, like they've said, they want an Aussie coaching it. I don't think it's Eddie Jones going forward. But someone like Stephen Larkham, don't know much about his coaching, but he's obviously a Wallaby legend. So, yeah, not a bad shout from you, Surly. But something needs to change, and, yeah, it's going to be interesting following that over the next few weeks and few years, I reckon. So, interesting times for Aussie rugby. I'll just quickly recap my fantasy rugby. Now, I got a massive score, 985, thanks to my backs in particular. Obviously, I spoke about Pinot, expecting him to get four tries. Didn't get the four tries, but he did get a massive score, 332 points being captain. So that was a massive tally for me. I also had DuPont, who got 106 points in about 45 minutes. He was on his way to a world record fantasy score, I reckon. He was on absolute fire. Now, Urrendale obviously got five tries and 128 points. So another massive score from him. Five tries is incredible. Also had Marcus Smith, who cracked the ton as well, 101. And Big Ramos, my super kicker, got 87, but I was let down by my Aussies on Monday morning. I had three Aussies in my side thinking that they were going to do quite well. Karevi only got me 8 points. That was tough for me to watch. And Valentini only 13, so need more from the big man there as well. And I also had Angus Bow, who got 21 points, who that's not too bad for a front row. I'm pretty happy with that, but it just goes to show that you do need to get your matchups right. I certainly wasn't picking that score, so loading my side up with Aussies in hindsight was not a good move. But that did move me up to 12th in the Woodlad League. There's 927 of you in the comp, so well done if you're playing. And I'm 1,244 overall, but I do feel like this is the toughest week of the comp so far. I think there's only two games which are potentially blowouts, but we'll get to those in the preview. And I think most of the fantasy gun players, the guys who are have real fantasy heavy games, have pretty niggly matchups. Not sure if they're going to run away with the big victories or not. So it's a real case of, do you go for like a Will Jordan or Mark Talia on the wing versus Italy, which I think is going to be a tougher matchup than some predict, or do you load up on the Scottish and Argentinian back three players who should put up a bit more of a score and get a few more fantasy points along the way. I think I'm leaning towards the latter. I think I'm going to load my backs up in particular, because that's where all the points are, with Scottish and Argentinian players, and go from there. But teams still aren't out, obviously, so can't give you any clues. But, yeah, that's where I'm looking to play my week. So we'll get to this week's preview. Obviously, the game this morning, Uruguay versus Namibia. I had Uruguay by 15 down here before the record, but what was the margin? About 10, was it? It's just finished.
Yeah, I think about 10-ish, 10 or 11.
And who watched it? Not me, 3 a.m.
I managed to catch the second half, and by the looks of things, Namibia had the game tied up, and then it was an absolute card fest. It was like 20 minutes of match.
Uruguay?
Yeah, Namibia looked like they had the game. They had a big lead going into halftime, or a decent lead going into halftime. Yeah. And then it was an absolute card fest, man. Like, both teams just decided they were going to start sniping each other in the head. I think there was two yellows and a red in a 15-minute period, and Namibia played a decent chunk of the second half with 13 men, and then Uruguay actually, like, just ran away with it last 15-20 minutes. Sully, you catch it as well?
Yeah, I saw like a 20-minute period as well, and that was post that 20 minutes of chaos like you mentioned. But yeah, there was four cards in that second half, which kind of changed the whole swing of the game. I was so excited for Namibia. I thought it was finally coming, that win, 25 on the bounce, but unfortunately not to be. And now they're done for the World Cup, so they get an early exit as well. The lads don't even get to stay on and enjoy France. They're probably on the first flight out of there just to save money. But yeah, tough times. Uruguay get the win, and heading in, I thought they were going to do it a lot more comfortably, but they were really pushed in this game.
Well, that's good to hear from Namibia's point of view, because like you say, they've had a pretty tough World Cup. They've been in a tough pool, not many easy games, but good to see them competing in that final game before they, like you say, head off back to Namibia before, like you were saying, Snake, they start chasing down the captain for the DuPont head coach. So they'll be on their first plane out. Okay, Nick.
Yeah, get him into witness protection, boys.
Yeah, I think he got 12 weeks, and then it's been halved to 6 weeks.
He's lucky he's still alive if he's still in France, boy.
Yeah. Okay, next game tomorrow, Japan versus Samoa. Now, this is a good close one. Japan are pretty disappointing so far, but they've got a good game in them. We've obviously seen them beat South Africa before at a Rugby World Cup. This wouldn't be quite the same upset, but Samoa going in as slight favourites. What are you predicting here, Surly?
Yeah, I'm backing Samoa to get the win just because of their form kind of over the last 6 months leading in, more than so in this World Cup. Obviously, they've got a few injuries, no Sopawanga still. They've had to make a few changes as well to the starting 15, so she's probably not full strength on paper, but I still think they have enough talent scattered throughout this team to get the win. I'm excited about the different contrasting styles that these two teams play. Japan love to play that kind of fast footy, where Samoa, they're so physical, but they do have that razzle and flair in them as well. So I think it has the potential to be a really good watch. Could also be one of those games where they just kind of go tit for tat and not a lot gets achieved. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'll be tuning into it for sure. Anytime Samoa play, I like to sit down and watch. I'm just hopeful for a bit more of that Pacific Nations type of form from them rather than what we've seen from them over the last couple of weeks.
Samoa by how many?
10.
10. Oh, mate, that's the exact same as I've got. Samoa by 10. Yeah. But Snakey, he'll be going Japan. He'll be mixing it up. That's what he's here for. What are you picking, Snake?
Yeah, for sure, boys. I mean, similar to Surly, if I turn on and it's a sunny French afternoon, I'll be locking into this one with some popcorn because I think this could be a cracker. That said, if I turn on and it's pissing down rain, boys, I am switching this game straight off. I have no interest in watching this game with a greasy ball. I've gone Japan by 10.
Oh.
That's what I've got written down in red on my screen. Yeah. I just think they're overdue a good game. We know they turn up at World Cups, and I think they're coming off the back of a week off, where they will have taken some big learnings from, like, how not to manage a game when they played against England the week before. And I just think this is the week they're back. Japan are back in the mix. World Cup upset. It's what they love. And I've not seen enough from Samoa yet to be convinced that they're massive favourites. Mm. So I'm fairly confident Japan get the job done here.
Oh, I like it. And good to have another split decision. You're one from one on these split decisions so far with Wales. So looking forward to reviewing that one next week. And the next one you're probably going to go against the favourites is New Zealand versus Italy. Northern Hemisphere, man, you've been talking up Italy all year, although I'm guessing you're not happy they've put Allen back to fullback. I saw that this morning and thought that Snake won't be happy with that one. But can they do an upset job?
Hey, look, well, they're unbeaten and they're above the All Blacks in the group, so they must be huge favourites going into this, no? Now, I think it's a good opportunity for Italy to show what they can do with ball in hand. Like, if they get quick ball, they get momentum and they can break this game open, boys. Like, they are a good team and they'll show you some good razzle. Yeah, wasn't too happy when I saw the lineup come out. I just think it really limits them as a team. I think it can be a little bit chaotic and frantic, but maybe that's the master plan. They want to just go full, loose, emotional, shoot from the hip against this New Zealand team and see if they can rattle someone. I just think the issue is defensively, like, they're not strong enough for this to be a serious matchup. So I've predicted ABs by 30, but a high scoring game. I'm expecting two or three tries from Italy.
Mate, I've gone ABs by 30 as well on the dot. Jeez, we're still in sync. What have you got here, Surly?
Yeah, I had ABs by 30, but I'm going to change it to 40 because I'm really excited. Oh. For this game. And I think the boys are going to put on a clinic, eh? Like, all this chat about Italy just being primed and kind of seeing this as their opportunity to pull off the upset. But the All Blacks, all the chat out of them and their camp is that they achieved a lot last week. There was a bit of niggle in camp as well. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Cozy, no doubt.
Yeah, surely.
The niggle king.
Yeah, big to Mighty Williams was involved as well. That's not someone you'd want to niggle with. But for me, this is a really strong 23. They mentioned they had pretty much everyone available for selection for this game. Roygaard and D-Mac played their way onto the bench, which alongside Whitelock and Kane, like, I think that gives us that bench impact that we've been missing and the impact we need to compete with your Islands and your Frances, because that's kind of where we tape it off in that first game against the French. Colsey on the bench as well. There's a few interesting calls, like tough on Leicester and a couple other guys as well. But when you look at that team on paper, 1-23, I think they're set for a big day at the office, so hopefully the sun's out in Leon. I'll be about 50 beers deep. You might even hear me through the broadcast giving it the big ones. But yeah, I think this is going to be a big statement performance from the ABs.
Mate, what song are you going to get started at in the crowd that we will know that, geez, Surly started that? Do you reckon you could get maybe the Waterlad jingle going? Or
yeah. Mate, I'm happy to take requests, but absolutely, the Waterlad jingle, like, that's a household song in New Zealand that everyone knows. Apparently even the Italian fans are big on it because it's snaky. So yeah, I'll do my best, mate. I'll start it and I'll gauge the reaction and we'll go from there.
Oh, jeez.
Well, I look forward to seeing the recording. But the return of Jordy Barrett, obviously his first game of the tournament. What are you looking forward to there?
Yeah, he's just another playmaker that gives us that game vision that I reckon we need. His ball running ability has improved so much over the past year since he's moved into the midfield, and he's actually really strong in that area. But, you know, his vision, his distribution, his kicking game, like, we've already got two 10s out there, but he's almost a third 10. He makes Richie's job so much easier, and I think just his presence gives Bodie some confidence as well. So I'm really excited to have Jordy back out there, and I'm hoping he can kind of unlock Rico as well, because I still think he's kind of travelling at 70 to 80% of his potential. He's just crazy when he gets ball in hand in space, so hopefully Jordy's distribution game can unlock him as well. But yeah, I'm really excited because I was getting quite nervous. Like, there hadn't been a lot of comms around that injury, so I was kind of expecting a headline to just pop up out of nowhere to say he was heading home. So yeah, the wife will be happy. I can sleep easier at night now knowing that King Geordie's back in the 15.
Yeah, mate. Well, I feel like the All Blacks really need a big performance here. Like, they are being slept on at the moment in terms of a chance to win the Rugby World Cup. Everyone's talking Ireland, South Africa, and France. I think All Blacks have dropped right down that list for non-Kiwi supporters. So it'd be awesome to just see them get out there, put on an absolute clinic and really set up this quarterfinal matchup, which is going to be one of the greatest quarterfinals ever, in my opinion. So,
All Blacks Scotland, you beauty.
Yeah. Well, you've called it. Okay, next one.
No.
Argentina versus Chile. Now, this is one of the few blowouts of the week for me. I'm expecting a big score from Argentina. I just haven't seen enough from Chile, to, especially defensively, to be able to stop the Argentinian side from ramping in about 1,000 tries. What are you guys going?
Snakey, you take this one, mate. I no doubt you're a passionate Chilean supporter.
Oh, you know I love the team of Waterlad, the boys. But if I'm being brutally honest with you, boys, I don't think I'm going to be watching this game because I expect it to be an absolute grind. Argentina get a huge bonus point win. I've gone Argentina by 50, but I reckon a good whack of that is penalty kick to the corner, penalty kick to the corner, set piece, shove over. That kind of vibe for me this weekend, I think. It'd be nice to see Argentina show a bit of their hand, but just, boys, I've seen nothing from them so far this World Cup to suggest that it'll be anything other than that. So this is my probably if I'm going to have one game, I slide over and watch the Premier League instead. I think it'll be this one this weekend, boys.
It's because you don't have your fantasy team up and running. So this is one of the games of the week for me. This will be where my captain will be. I'll have all my outside backs loaded. And you mentioned that rolling maul. Geez, it made me think maybe I should change to get the whoever's named it hooker for Argentina, Creevy or...
Yeah, for sure. Oh, if it's Creevy, man, he's guaranteed 2 scores a game.
Oh, there we go.
Guaranteed.
That's a fact.
I don't think I ever played a game with him where he didn't score 2 tries.
Well, it's because you were just plugging it right 5 metres out of any penalties. Absolute wizard off the boot.
What are you talking about, mate? I was Mike Tom running tee.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, we'll just skip on to the next one. Fiji versus Georgia. Well, Snake, you've already mentioned you're picking a wee upset here. What are you thinking?
I really want to sit here and say, is this a potential banana skin from Fiji after a massive, massive performance last week? A come down, you know, can they get caught off guard? I just haven't seen enough from Georgia for that to be the case. I think Fiji rotate, and I think they still go in fucking Fiji by 35. Which is a real shame because I'd love to look at this matchup and give you something different, but I can't stand here honestly and say that I've seen enough from Georgia to suggest otherwise.
Did you say Fiji by 35?
Yeah.
Wow, you completely changed your tune. I thought you were picking an upset, and 35's a massive score for Fiji to put on them.
Yeah, I'm desperate to pick an upset, but I just the more I've sat and thought about it, because I really wanted to push the like, oh, this is a banana skin narrative for Fiji before they walk through to their dream quarterfinal. But I've thought about it, and I just don't think, especially watching that Portugal Georgia game from the other day again, I just think Fiji are going to be too good and run away with it.
I feel like I'm half Fijian at the moment. I'm right behind the boys, but I've only got them by 20 here. So, geez, you've made me feel like a bit of a sellout. I thought Georgia were going to put up a hell of a fight here. I thought, especially at set piece time. What are you going, Surly? Interested to get your thoughts here.
Yeah, well, I'm a real fence sitter because I had them 20 to 30, so I'm in between the both of you. Know, I also had written down that this coming into the World Cup, I had as a banana skin game, but now I've got rid of that. So clearly we're all dialed in and singing from the same run sheet. But yeah, it's just a shame. Like for me, Georgia have been one of those sides that's really improved over this World Cup cycle, but they just haven't brought it into this tournament. I think under 20s level, they're killing it as well. So the future's bright for them. But yeah, they've just struggled. Like that Portugal game, I expected so much more from them. So yeah, I've got Fiji winning this one and fairly comfortably as well. They'll pick up the 5 points that they need in order to advance, and then they'll be locked in for a huge game against Snakey's lads. But yeah, I'm glad to say that this is no longer a banana skin game because I just had this image of Aussie beating Wales or Australia, one of the two, and then kind of being their own worst nightmare in a game like this. So I'm stoked that it's not going to play out that way, fingers crossed.
Well, the thing is, even if they lose this game, they only need 5 points to qualify. So it doesn't really change anything. Which probably makes it even more potentially a banana skin game for them to switch off and have a few more carvers. But obviously had Sam Matavesi on the podcast last week, which gave me a real good insight into this Fiji side, and mate, I think they are onto something special, and I could see them going all the way to a semi-final is where I'm sort of seeing them get to now. I'm really impressed with their side and what's going on in that environment. So up the Fiji. Okay, next one, Scotland versus Romania. Another good one for fantasy players. Load your side up with Scottish players. I've gone Scotland by 70. Anyone different there? Anyone think it's going to be tighter or bigger?
Nah, I think obviously expecting Scotland to rotate their squad a little bit with Ireland coming up the week after, but I don't think they'll go like wholesale changes. I think they'll put Finn on ice. I think they might change Whitey, Ben White, the scrum half, and maybe rest some of the forwards, but I think they'll stay pretty strong. My fantasy pick for your gym was Darcy Graham if they start him. Absolute gas, hell of a finisher, especially late in the game as the Romania team starts to tire. But I've gone Scotland by 60.
Nice. I had Van der Meer down as a fantasy option, but he's probably not going to start, is he?
No, he took some bashing this week, didn't he? Like, I'm not saying he got bashed, but they had some massive impacts this week, both ones that he won and both ones that he lost. So I think he'll probably be on ice. and they'll be revving them up to play against Ireland the week after. If I'm honest, they're quite deep at winger.
Yeah, fair enough. Darcy it is, mate. He could be my triple captain. That's the game I was looking to, not triple, my captain. That's the game I was looking to use it. So whoever's on those wings for Scotland, man, I wish the teams could just be named a little bit earlier. But shout out to Rassie again for naming his South African squad nice and early. Did you have any predictions in that Scotland game, Shirley?
No, I just kind of had it noted that I think this is the game where Scotland kind of show that they are one of those top sides by being able to rest players and still just put away a lesser nation by plenty of points. So I had them by 60 as well. I think they'll just be way too good no matter who's out there. And just another little primer for them towards that big game coming up.
I like it. Okay, next game, Aussie versus Portugal. So like we've mentioned, Wales beat Portugal by 20, they beat Aussie by 40, so Portugal by 20, right? Is that right, Snake?
Yeah, that's how it works, isn't it, Jim? No, I mean, coming into this game, Jim, I don't think I've ever seen a side potentially any lower on confidence than Australia, and we look at the Wales performance against Portugal, a side also who at the time were maybe a little bit low on confidence, certainly weren't a side playing to space, and Portugal caused them a bit of issues. I don't think I can see the result going to Portugal. I won't go that far, but I certainly think they can cause Australia a bit of a headache. I've gone Australia by 30, but I really think Portugal will cause them some issues, especially with how chaotic that Australia defence looks at times.
Yeah, I've gone Australia by 20. I've gone even less than you. I'm like you, man. They look a lost team at the moment. If you told me what I'd be predicting in a Portugal-Australia game at the start of this World Cup, I would have been thinking 70 to 80. But Portugal have probably been the surprise package of the minnows for me. They've been the team that have probably impressed me the most. And Aussie have been the surprise package for the wrong reasons. I've been so disappointed with them coming over here and the way they've been playing. But what are you going, Shirley? You're the one who knows.
Yeah, I had a little laugh to myself there because I've gone Aussie by 25, which is split down the middle of New Zealand. It's becoming ridiculous now. Everyone's going to think this is set up. But yeah, I'd love to be a fly on the wall in the Portugal camp this week, eh? Because they're a passionate bunch anyway. But imagine the rev up speech they're getting at the moment. You know, the old Aussies right there for the taking. Let's fire up. This is our World Cup final type of stuff. It'll be iconic scenes, and if they get the win, if they pulled off the upset, well, I would never hear the end of it. But yeah, Eddie can hardly afford to rest any players, can he? I haven't seen the Wallabies team. I don't know if it's been named yet, but like, what's he got to lose now? He has to try and save some face and a bit of character. So yeah, I expect the Wallabies to be too good, but geez, I'd love for it to be kind of close 30 minutes in and see how the lads respond to that type of pressure.
Yeah, you mentioned the Portugal speech and pre-match speech or changing rooms, but I can only imagine what Eddie Jones is going to be saying in that Aussie changing rooms. Like, I saw the skit of a guy who actually looked a bit like you doing the Eddie Jones impression, saying it was next Sunday, mate. He's going to surprise them. But
was that Finn Russell, was it? Oh,
Well, but what do you think Eddie's saying to his boys?
Oh, to be honest, I don't know if the boys even want Eddie in there, to be fair. They've probably told Eddie to hit the pubs, go and see the beautiful beaches of France, and there's plenty of great beaches, great beach clubs, lots of nice restaurants. So if that is the way it's gone, then maybe Eddie's done the right thing. There was even rumours of him a straight swap with Robbie Deans, who's coaching in Japan, and they just swap gigs and old dingoes back in the mix. But yeah, I don't know what Eddie would say. Obviously, post-game, if they lose, he'll take full responsibility for it. He's always good for that. And he'll just tell some reporters they know nothing about it. And then, yeah, we'll all move on. But I don't know. I feel a bit sorry for him as well, because I just don't think they've got the cattle to win. So I think it's a bit of both. And he's trying his best. Bless him, old Edward. But yeah, they have to win this, man.
Yeah, it is hard. He's been over there trying to pump up the side. He's gone probably way overboard of how in pumping them up, and then obviously results have gone to absolute crap, and now he's copping it, which you always do when you talk yourself up. You're always going to end up copping it if you can't deliver the results. So, but yeah, like you, I do feel a little bit sorry for him as well, but he sometimes is his own worst enemy. Okay, last game of the round, South Africa v Tonga. This is an interesting one. South Africa have looked good, physical, but Tongans love the physicality, so it might match might help them with their styles. I've gone South Africa by 30. Pollard's in. I think he'll kick his goals and that racks up the score pretty quick. What have you gone here, Snake?
Yeah, I've gone South Africa by 40 as well. I think it's really interesting with what you said about Pollard. Eh? Like, if Pollard comes in and goes 100% off the tee, kicks all his goals and doesn't set the world alight, because we're not expecting that from him after a long period off with injuries, and also it's just not the kind of player he is. But if he has a solid game and kicks all his goals, does that put Razzie in a bit of an awkward situation, where Lebok's been the guy for the last 18 months and has played some great rugby, but playoff time at the World Cup, do they have to make a tough call there? That's why this game's interesting for me.
Yeah, well, I think they have to, just because of the style they play. It's a little bit like England. They want to win the set piece. They want to back their D. They're going to get penalties, so they need to be able to go up in threes. And like, if that's how they want to play, then Pollard's their man. If they're willing to play it a little bit more to the backs, like we've already spoken about, well, then Lebok's your man. So I think it's whatever style they're going to look to play going forward. And I'd love to see them stick with Lebok and give their backs a little bit more room or opportunity to showcase their skill. But I just don't think it's their style with their 7-1 splits. They're so forward-orientated and winning the collisions. So I'm not sure. I feel like Pollard's probably the man that suits their style better. What are you going in this game, Surly?
Yeah, I have them by 30 as well. Like you said, it's going to be a physical game. It's almost one of those ones where you can pick up a concussion watching from the couch, because there's going to be some massive shots. Eh? Like, this is going to be brutal. And I'm excited to watch it. I don't think Tonga will live up to their potential, which we've been hoping they would for the last couple of weeks. And I'm expecting South Africa to do it pretty easy. And just on that Pollard point, I think they will roll with him purely just because of the backlash if they don't. Like, if they lose one of those finals games due to early missed kicks or whatever it is, if he's on the bench, he comes on and slots all of them, but it's not enough. I think the South African public will just lose it, eh? They're so passionate about their footy, especially their goal kicking as well. They've always been one of the great kicking nations. So I think just the public pressure will be too much to have Pollard in there. But I'm looking forward to this game purely because of the physicality, but I don't see South Africa struggling in this one.
Nah, fair enough. We're all on the same page in most of those games, and it is going to be another awesome round of Rugby World Cup action. So much drama in this Rugby World Cup at the moment. It's great to watch. But we have already predicted our quarterfinals, which is interesting. Like, we've gone through the games. We've basically predicted who's going to finish first or second in the pools, and the quarterfinals that have come out are absolutely juicy. So the first game, this is because Argentina have finished second in their pool. Wales obviously finished top. And the only real option there is if Samoa beat England or Japan beat Argentina. So both pretty unlikely. So we're predicting Argentina to squeeze into second, even though they haven't been playing that well. Wales versus Argentina, first quarterfinal. What are we predicting here? Are Wales that good? Or Argentina a chance here?
I think on current form, Argentina probably the weakest team in this quarterfinal roundup, aren't they? The other thing I would say is Argentina, they obviously had a tough run against England first time. But other than that, it's not been a particularly sort of tough ride to the quarterfinal for them. Wales are very much at this point the battle-hardened side, I would say, in this quarterfinal. They've essentially played two quarterfinal games already against Fiji and Australia. Certainly going into the game, you know, the outcome of the game would mean in their preparation. I'm not saying that 80 minutes against Australia was tough, don't get me wrong. But I feel like Wales are a battle-hardened side now. And, you know, I spoke a couple of weeks ago on the pod about the backdrop of Welsh rugby over the last 18 months. And it does look like it's just kind of unified the Wales group. I think that's probably where Warren Gatland's man management skills come into his own. They certainly look like it's very much everyone's written us off and it's us against the rest of the World Cup. And I think they're going to back themselves to do an all right job. You know, they've got the easiest draw potentially to progress. You know, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that they're favourites to go to a semi-final, but I certainly think they'll walk over this Argentina team and maybe even cause someone some problems in the next round.
Mate, imagine that. Wales straight into a semi-final. Warren Gatland, absolute god in Wales already. So, geez, imagine what that would be like. Surly, agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I think in the last World Cup cycle, I probably would have picked Argentina just because of the way that they were playing. Like, they used to play with so much flair and passion. They were really enjoyable to watch. And on their day, they could beat anyone. And we've seen it in the past. But just seems like they've almost had the life sucked out of them a little bit as of late. So, yeah, I think they'll try to play Wales at a really similar game plan. And the Welsh will be too good. So it's not the most exciting quarterfinal to watch. But I think Wales will get the job done.
Yeah, I feel like the loss of the Jaguares has been massive for Argentina rugby, because when they were all playing, they were so connected as a group. They were travelling together basically all year playing Super Rugby, and then off to internationals. They were a tight-knit group, and they were all so in sync with the style they were trying to play. So the fact that they're gone and they're all playing overseas and they just come back for these internationals, I think has really hurt the national side. But to make the quarterfinal, I think they'll be pretty happy with that, really. Next game, Ireland versus All Blacks. Sunday morning, 8 a.m. here in New Zealand. This is going to be one of the greatest quarterfinals ever. Watching that Ireland-South Africa game, I was thinking to myself, geez, can the All Blacks match this intensity? Like, this is incredible intensity in that game. If they can, they're a chance. If they can't, oh, it's going to be a long quarterfinal watch. What are we predicting here? Start with you, Surly. Give me the Kiwis some hope, surely.
Yeah, well, I was nervous too watching that game, because I couldn't help but think if the All Blacks were chucked in there, how it would look. But hearing the players talk during the week, I was quite excited about what they were saying. Like, they said they loved watching that game, that that was the benchmark that they need to get to, and it's kind of ignited that fire within the All Blacks camp as well, that they're still a bit off the pace, but they certainly know that they can get there. So I'll always back the boys through thick and thin, but like we've said quite a fair bit now, Ireland, they're the form side in the competition, and they just find ways to beat you. Like, they're so accurate when they're just flowing, their structures are beautiful, and while they may lack in kind of set-piece dominance, or when an area of their game isn't quite firing, they find other ways around it by just playing to their strengths. So they're an incredibly strong side. My hope is that we haven't seen the All Blacks' best 23 out on the park yet. We're probably going to see it this week against Italy, and then I'll kind of judge things off the back of there, because we're getting back experience, we're getting back leadership, we're getting back playmakers, all of that stuff you need to win the big game. So, yeah, I'm still hopeful that we'll go through and beat the Irish, but if there was one team you probably don't want to play at the moment, it is them. So, again, just such a shame that it comes at a quarterfinal, because semi-final or final, this would have been one of the great games. It still will be. But just knowing that there's still games to come after, it doesn't feel right, eh?
Yeah, no, it is a bittersweet feeling. But you mentioned strongest 23. There's still Ethan Blackadder to come.
Oh,
don't forget that he is going to start in the finals of this Rugby World Cup. Heard it here months ago. Snakey, obviously your Northern Hemisphere side, you're probably going to snap us back into reality here. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think Ireland are the form team in the tournament so far. And I just think exactly what Surly said, like any issue that crops up in a game or any problems they get presented with, these boys are so well coached and organized. They find the solution. You just, every single thing they do up and down the park, they've got multiple options. They have absolute clarity. Like, even I was watching their exits in the game at the weekend, and they just, every single time they exit, they have a run pass kick option with right footers and left footers all across the field. And they just, whatever situation they're in, they can think themselves out. It's difficult to go against the All Blacks in a knockout stage of a World Cup, but I do think Ireland are one of those teams who psychologically have got over the All Blacks, that we can't beat the All Blacks mentality. They are one of those teams now that sort of busted the myth. They've done it a few times, and I think every single person in that Ireland camp will go into the game absolutely believing they are the favourites and they should win, which has not always been the case in the past. I've gone Ireland with my pick, but cautiously, because I do totally agree with what you boys have said. I've put here, I've not seen enough from the All Blacks so far, but I think that's not because they don't have the ability to perform at the level expected. I just think we haven't seen the full strength of this side yet. So it's going to be a hell of a game, and it'll be one that I'll be watching eagerly. I think Ireland are too well coached, and they have too many options across the park for the All Blacks to find the solutions.
Well, it's hard to disagree with you. The All Blacks have to make massive shifts from that first game they played against France. I think Ireland are the best team in the comp. So for them to come up against them in the quarterfinal, they're going to have to improve drastically from that first game we saw, which was really the only time they've been under pressure. So obviously this weekend against Italy, we might see them under pressure at times, but we're not really going to know until that big quarterfinal match, which is quite a tough sort of build-up for the game. One massive game and then nothing really till the quarterfinal. But hopefully they've been working hard at each other. And like you say, Surly, lots of niggle in the training, keeping the edge there. Next game would be England v Fiji. Wow. Snake, can England make it through to the limp their way into a semi?
Let's hear it, mate. Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Oh, this is the one Jimmy's been looking forward to for weeks, isn't it? The massive contrast in styles of these two sides. I think this one for me is the hardest one to call, which is saying something considering we look at the next fixture that's come up and the one just before. But I do think this one's the closest of the two fixtures. And my reasoning for that is, well, like England are coming off the back of a what will undoubtedly be a tough physical game against Samoa that they're going to have to pay their full respect to in terms of their preparation and their team selection. Whereas Fiji come off the back of Portugal, where they can rotate a bit and maybe the coaches can already start planning a week early to potentially, you know, what they're going to show against England. So I think there's a lot in Fiji's favour, not even mentioning the fact that they beat England a week before the tournament. I've gone with England with my pick, and my reason is just that big game experience factor. Most of the England squad have been here before. They've played a lot of big games, and they've gone deep in World Cups before, especially those guys in key game-driving positions. That's not the case with Fiji, but I can see it going the other way, but I've gone England cautiously. What do you lads reckon?
Surely.
Yeah, this is a tough one for me because, of course, again, the heart says to just go all in on Fiji because how good would it be to see them go through to the semi-final? But like Snakey mentioned before as well, the Irish, they have the belief they can beat the All Blacks. Well, Fiji now have that belief that they can beat England too. And in terms of form, you'd back Fiji to do it. I just wonder if the loss of months, like prior to the World Cup, if he was at 10 for this game, then I'd 100% back them to get the job done just because of the way he leads that team around and just brings them that structure and that ability to play a bit more towards the style that can beat England. I just wonder if, like Snakey mentioned, that big game pressure will get to them. But I'll be all in on the Fijian, so I'm going to back Fiji and I'll say Fiji just to wind Snakey up as much as anything. But yeah, that's a pure heart bet and I'm just hoping they can pull it off because... And like, how crazy would that be? If you told me a year ago that Fiji would be in a Rugby World Cup semi-final after beating the Wallabies and beating England, like, chaos. I would never have picked that.
Yeah, it's been awesome to see the rise of Fiji. I'm going Fiji. I'm with you. I just think the threats they have across the park are just so dangerous. And when they're on, they are completely on. So I can see it going the other way, like you said, Snake, though. I could see England also sort of strangling Fiji, going up in threes, really putting their set piece under a heap of pressure, kicking really well, watching Fiji trying to counter a little bit too much or overplay their hand. But if they do get things right, look out, because that Fiji side have plenty of points in them and geez, they can play. So yeah, oh, that's a matchup, man. There's how good are these quarterfinals? And the last one would be France versus South Africa. Oh, two of the greats as well. I'm going to lean towards France here, especially with Dupont in a mask, but this is going to be a hell of a game.
Yeah, this one for me is one of those ones where I think you have to come back to me in a week just so I can decide, because it's all around Dupont for me. Like, it really is. If he's in this side, then I think they get the win. You add to that, you know, the goal kicking, everything. They tick all the boxes, and then with him there, he's the best 9 and probably the best 10 in the world as well, just the way he sees the game and the way he drives this team around the paddock. So if Dupont's there, masked up, gets approved by World Rugby and he's good to go, then I'll back the French in, especially at home as well. I just think the lift that home crowd gave them in that first game, like the atmosphere through there, it was second to none. And the way they get behind their team is pretty crazy. So I'd back them to get the win with Dupont at 9. If not, then I'll probably flip the other way and go South Africa, to be honest. I think that they would have enough to get it done. And I think he is the game changer.
Mate, he is that influential. It's hard to disagree with you there. But I just love, like you say, crowd behind France, Ramos on the tee. He just never looks like missing. I think they did it so easy against All Blacks to just win a penalty. Ramos would step up, 3 points, just building pressure that way. So hard, especially without a goal kicker. So South Africa have their own issues there. But I just can see France just ticking that scoreboard over, winning penalties, Ramos stepping up and not being a real open test match, but just a real grind, a little bit like what we saw with Ireland in the weekend. What about you, Snake? Were you seeing this one?
Yeah, I think France, like many European sides, man, they rely so much on emotion and being up for the big occasion. And I just see this team, this French team, the bigger the stage, the more Frenchies in the crowd, the louder the anthem's being sung 10 minutes into the game. I just see them getting taller and taller throughout the game. I think I only worry about France when they have supposedly easy games they should win. They're your classic banana skin team. I just think this is the perfect quarterfinal for them, man. This is like in their own house, someone's going to come in and claim they're going to punch their lights out. And I just think these French guys are going to be 20 foot tall. They're going to be so up for it. Obviously, Dupont is absolutely huge for him. Like Jim, you mentioned in the preview, like you can't understate the fact, like this is the best player I've ever seen play rugby. Obviously, he's going to have a huge impact on whether France is successful in this quarterfinal or not, especially when you consider they already lost his partner, Intermac, coming into the tournament. So then, you know, they're looking at a quarterfinal potentially down both their starting halfbacks who have been, you know, literally the key pillar of what them and Toulouse have done over the last 5 or 6 years. But I just think France, the bigger the occasion, the bigger those guys get, they'll be pumping out tears during the national anthem. And I just think they if they get their tails up, they could roll South Africa here.
Yeah, I'd be interested, like, the mental factor, if Dupont and Intermac are both out, like surely the French, they don't have their tails up at all, right? Like that would be too much of a bridge to climb mentally.
No, 100%. And that's like, that's such a good like point on what I said. Like, you're right. They are so emotional, but then at times they can be like emotionally fragile. Like the smallest thing going wrong can rattle them. Yeah. And if they decide like, fuck, the boss isn't here today, we can't get this done, then they can fold and then South Africa can roll them. So, yeah. Like, it's so important on Dupont, isn't it? But obviously it is, man. The guy's the best player in the world for the last decade. Mm. Like, of course that's the case.
Mate, how good. How good are the quarterfinal? We've already done the preview for the quarterfinal week. We'll be able to just copy and paste this in a few weeks' time. But, man, that has, like, got me really fired up for knockout footy, especially for this Rugby World Cup. It's going to be some incredible games. But that is, we will wrap it up there because that has been one of the great previews from you two lads, picking winners, picking players all over the show. So I appreciate you guys coming on and giving up your time as always. Bring on another week of Rugby World Cup action and see you same time, same place next week, eh?
How good. Cheers, lads.
Cheers, Tony.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening. And if you've got this far, I'm guessing you enjoyed the episode. So if you did, please give it a share if you can. And also cheers to our mates at Spates for sponsoring this episode.